Welcome to On Our Watch, a podcast about coastal erosion and sustainability in Louisiana, as well as the implications for coastal systems worldwide. My name is Marion Evans. I'm a filmmaker and a producer of the documentary On Our Watch, a feature-length film about Louisiana's coastal land loss crisis. The film's director, Jonathan Evans, and I are proud to produce this podcast series that will continue to explore important coastal issues through conversations with local residents, community leaders, and experts. In this episode, we're speaking with Renee Colini. Renee is the director of the Gulf Center for Equitable Climate Resilience at the Water Institute. She brings years of experience in providing tools and support to federal, state, and local entities pursuing adaptation and resilience strategies. And now, our interview with Renee Colini. Thank you so much for joining us today, Renee. So you are the director for the Gulf Center for Equitable Climate Resilience here at the Water Institute.
Props for getting that right.
Thank you. So I was wondering if you could tell us how you got involved with the Water Institute and what drew you to this field of climate resilience?
Well, I guess to answer them in order, what drew me to the Water Institute, honestly, was I saw people not afraid to try working on hard things, you know, and to try hard things, which is what climate resilience is, and people willing to take risks and branch out. And so that's really what drew me here, that and this specific job. For over 10 years, I'd worked on climate resilience along the Gulf Coast, and that was the focus, right? I worked on climate resilience, but I was doing that in underserved or marginalized communities and spaces, and it led to really unique challenges. And there were commonalities I was starting to see, and it made me want to tackle those issues to sort of unlock more capacity for climate resilience. And this job was that opportunity to sort of switch the focus and think more about those systemic barriers and challenges and things we could try to do that would maybe have a more larger or more systematic impact to unlock more capacity for climate resilience for more people.
Okay, interesting. And so can you tell me a little bit about what does the Center for Equitable Climate Resilience do, and what is its purpose?
Well, we're still figuring that out. So the center has been an idea and a mission for the Water Institute for quite some time. And last year, it really got to sort of turn into reality. We got a little bit of funding to get started, and then I was brought on board as well. And so we've spent the past year listening, talking to people, trying to intentionally capture what the needs across the Gulf look like, but also not ask the same questions that have already been asked. Mm-hmm. And so from that, we're building out what it is we're going to do and how we're going to do it. Some things have already come to the top. We are definitely tackling insurance, affordability, and availability. There's also a focus on fundamentals. So for those of you who did band or sports, fundamentals are those things you have to have, those skills, so then you can build more complex things and build out into more advanced spaces. And there's a need for that when it comes to equitable climate resilience. And so that's another one. And we recently had a workshop in November where partners also focused on migration. And again, thinking a lot about how we make the decisions, what legal frameworks there are to enable community-led migration. Mm-hmm. So that kind of rose to the top. And also we're really thinking about flood risk, but the decision-making on flood risk infrastructure. What does that look like? How do we move that forward in a more inclusive way? And those later two, we're still feeling them out and getting more information to make sure we are helping in spaces where there aren't currently folks working or where people need help. Because there's a lot of great work already happening across the Gulf on climate resilience, but we know there's still a lot more to be done. And so we're doing this so that we can add that energy into those spaces that need the help.
Okay. So a lot of what you're doing is trying to figure out, like, what are the biggest issues facing coastal communities in Louisiana? And so how are you doing that? You're just going into the communities and talking to people? And
we're doing it a bunch of different ways. One of the big things, like I said, is a lot of people have answered these questions already of, like, what are their challenges? What are the barriers to addressing them? So I actually collaborate with a lot of great people at the Water Institute, but in particular, one of my colleagues, Nastaran, she's got a great title. She's a decision scientist. She has this skill set where she can use software to import text from plans, needs assessments, strategic plans, just different documents that maybe not in the peer-reviewed literature, right, that community-based organizations or nonprofits have put together. And she actually was able to analyze those and pull out common themes or words, but not just like, oh, flood risk is a thing or health is a thing, but she was also able to see what action words go with that to get a sense of what kind of needs there are. And so we started to build from that actually. And then at that workshop, we had people from communities, from boundary organizations, from local governments, from state government, from federal government come and help us work through, okay, here's what we heard looking at these reports. Where should we prioritize? Did we miss anything? So it's a sort of systematic approach to narrowing it down and dialing in. And the report from that should be coming out like any day now. And then right behind that will be our strategic plan where we have outlined, okay, these are the things that people have said are important to them, where the additional effort could be useful. Here are the specific actions from that we hope to really move forward on. And like I said, some of them we've already been moving on, insurance in particular, and then those fundamentals.
Okay, very interesting. It seems like you're really trying to figure out what people actually need instead of just going in and telling them.
Yeah, no. Someone asked me once, well, how do you define resilience? And I was like, well, that's not up to me to define. Each person has their own definition of resilience and each community has their own definition of resilience. And so it's up to me to learn what that is for them and then figure out what I could add to the table to move towards it.
Right. And how does the center help local communities navigate their governmental systems to actually implement plans and make progress towards protecting their communities?
Again, it depends on the community. So in Louisiana, we've had the pleasure of working with a few different groups. And in each case, it's varied. So in some cases, it's actually about just introductions. Hey, here are folks who work on this. Here are people who do the thing that you're looking for. In some cases, it's about helping pursue federal funding and just navigating federal funding bureaucracy. And that's on two different counts, right? It's like, oh, we got to put a grant in and get the money. But there's also a lot of strings that come when you get the money. And so knowing what they are and how to budget for that or how to account for that or how to track for that. So it kind of depends. One thing that I think we always think happens is that everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. But I've found that there's always opportunities to build connections and bridges to support that other people could provide or mutually beneficial relationships. So I also do a lot of that. But I will say the center's role is not to be in every community. Mm-hmm. We could never do that, right?
Yeah.
The center and the Water Institute are a finite number of people.
Yeah.
And so it's about engaging really intentionally in specific locations where we can learn lessons and build and, again, take creative risks and try new things and then share out. So, for example, I am working with a community in Biloxi, Mississippi, where we've been working on bottom-up community capacity building and helping the folks there gain the confidence and skills to engage with their local civic leaders, but to pursue grants, to develop and then implement an action plan, actually, to help rebuild in a climate-smart way post-Katrina. And that approach is something that we are trying to replicate here in Louisiana. But again, okay, now it's about how does it transfer? How do we build out these skills? What's unique about each community versus what is something we can maintain as constant? Mm-hmm. And it's exciting to watch the outcome of those kinds of projects.
Yeah. And so how do you determine which communities you're going to work with then?
I'd love to tell you there is a magic formula, but it's a combination of need and opportunity and thinking through, okay, well, we've heard that this is a need there, and is there also opportunity to move something forward? Mm-hmm. We are still working through, like, on the insurance one. We'd love to do a series of pilots, if we could, on a different way of doing flood insurance, known as community-based catastrophe insurance, or CBCIs, which is, it's got a lot of potential, but we need to try it. And so we have a couple communities we've talked to in Louisiana that we know are interested. And so it just, what comes at the right time with people's capacity and ability to engage as well.
And can you tell me about some of the center's efforts regarding education for students and individuals about how to improve their climate resilience and just staying informed about potential risks?
Yeah. Absolutely. We talked about, like, I come from an extension background. Mm-hmm. And so just for folks who are tuning in and have not heard of it before, extension has its origin story, if you will, in universities and education. But it's that idea of extending information into a decision-making way. So helping someone take in climate information and decide what they may or may not do differently. The center thinking about that again, we're not going to be in every classroom, but supporting the incredible work done at the Water Institute, being put into the hands of educators, making sure that it's being translated and sustained into different spaces that help deliver that, working with other boundary spanning organizations. So for example, there's a training that we've been developing called the Equitable Engagement Training. And we talked about capacity building for the fundamentals. You know, the capacity building for a community to engage is like that bottom up, but we also need staff and municipal employees and folks who are coming sort of from a top-down perspective to know how to engage more equitably. So we're refining and doing that training in places, but then we want to deliver it to other people. So then other groups can do that training and bring it to people and help engage that way and help bring that skill. And same thing with other concepts of education. You know, we've been partnering to make sure that as this information turns into curricula, we're putting it into the hands of educators or train the trainers, if you will, educators who educate other educators. So that way there's a sustained mechanism for that to go on. Because you can build the best tools and the best science and the best curricula in the world, but if you don't have a way to get it out into the world, it'll just languish.
Right. And that's how, you know, you don't need to be in every community if the education is there for people to do it themselves. Yeah.
Right. And there's already so much great work. There's support systems and networks and people that they turn to. Sea Grant's a great example of that. You know, they're folks that are embedded in these parishes or in these towns. And so it's not so much that I need to be there as much as I just need to make sure the skills we've learned or the things that we've developed are available and accessible and people know about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that you think that people who live in coastal communities would be better off knowing, or is there like a piece of advice that you would give?
Keep talking about it. Mm-hmm. There's this study done by Yale where they call it the Six Americas, and they've been for a long time now asking people how concerned they are about climate change. And in the beginning, there was a more even spread, but now very few people are actually dismissive of climate change. Most people in the country and in the state of Louisiana are concerned in some way about the changes that we've seen and the changes that are going to keep happening and what it means for them personally. Mm-hmm. But less than a third of those people talk about it. And the only way things change is if people are talking about it and aware of it to then make changes, ask for changes, determine what the changes even need to be. So I think the first thing would be to talk about it. Talk about it with your friends, talk about it with your neighbors, and then as part of talking about it, ask questions. And the more questions you ask, the more you can connect back to the universities, the nonprofits, the organizations that are working on this that can help you think about what the strategies are.
Right, because if something's like scary to you, you might not want to think about it or talk about it, and then you might not know that there might be a solution or something to help.
I think about when I was a little kid, and if I was like, I'd gone into my parents' room when it was dark and I needed to get something, and then I'd like sprint back out of the room because the lights were off and it was scary. But if I just turned the light on, then it was a completely fine thing to walk through and get what I needed and come back. And it's the same idea. You know, it's this big monstrous thing that's kind of in the dark and we don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. But if we turn the light on, we know what's there. We know what we have to figure out, what we already know, and how we can move forward. One of the things I think happens a lot is people feel like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen with climate change, or what's going to happen to our coast with erosion. Mm-hmm. And we actually do know a lot. We know certainly enough to start taking action. Mm-hmm. And so helping people be comfortable with that idea, that we don't need to let perfect get in the way of good enough information to move forward.
Yeah.
And so I think by not talking about it, we lose that message.
Yeah. It kind of normalizes it so it's not so scary and something you can work together on.
Yes. A good example with sea level rise. We know seas are going up. We don't know exactly how much they're going to go up, but between 2017 and 2022, we had two reports, right? In 2017, this new report came out with sea level rise scenarios, and they updated them in 2022. That's not that many years, but the range of how much seas might rise by 2050 shrunk so much. Now it's like less than a foot of range when it was multiple feet before. Mm-hmm. That's totally workable information. And we're confident in that. We have multiple lines of evidence for that. Mm-hmm. So that's great. We can move forward. We know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's definitely progress that's happening that sometimes can get lost in the noise.
Yeah.
In the dark.
Yeah. What would you say that you like most about your job?
That I get to try hard things. Mm-hmm. Insurance is, people were upset about it. They're still upset about it. You know, people have been kind of wringing their hands about it, mm-hmm. but I had ideas of like things I wanted to tackle that I thought we could try to make a difference in people's mm-hmm. premiums and different ways we deliver it. And when I got here and I said, I want to try this, there was a whole team of people who were like, that sounds cool, let's try it. That sounds hard, let's go for it. There wasn't a reticence to be turned off by the complexity or by the enormity of something. It yeah. was like, okay, let's find our chunk and let's start working through it. And I don't know, it just makes me happy
yeah.
to be able to try to tackle the hard challenges.
Right.
Because somebody's got to do it.
Right, and all these issues are hard, you know. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. But just because it's unknown right now, it mm-hmm. doesn't mean that we can't change it, and we are changing it.
Yeah. Are there any upcoming projects or initiatives with the center that you're excited about?
So many. And then she talked for an hour and a half. No. There's two that jump out at me. The Louisiana sort of the pilot, right, of trying to get a CBCI here. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to try and find some resources to get that done here because I think there's a great opportunity to tackle multiple facets of the insurance challenge by doing that here, not just premiums or the type of insurance, but also data sources and details and some of those other, like in the nerdy bits that are really actually important. But there's also a project we have right now where we are in a different state, but we think it'll be transferable here, where they did a marsh restoration. And the purpose of it was for birds or habitat, right? But the secondary benefit is that it had a reduction in flood for those people who live behind the marsh. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually working right now to tie together that marsh restoration to the flood insurance premiums of those homeowners. And they're currently, with the new way they do risk rating 2.0, there isn't a set way to do that yet. So we're trying to work to establish how we connect good flood risk reduction measures to our premiums. And then if we can figure that out, we could start to implement that at a much broader scale very quickly.
Wow.
So I'm super excited about that because there's a lot of work happening in Louisiana that yeah. could, you know, not to get credit, but like to get credit for, right?
Yeah.
So that was a big one. And then I am really excited about this fundamentals, the equitable engagement training, the building capacity, just figuring out, as we learn more, what are the things that really can make a difference for communities really running? Mm-hmm. I've been working with a couple communities in Louisiana, and there's so many great ideas of like, when you let communities define for themselves, when you get some of the like top-down planning out of the way and step back enough, such creative ideas and such cool approaches and processes come forward. And it's not my story to tell, but I am just excited to work with these communities to help move that forward in any way I can, because it's stuff that, you know, just hasn't been brought up before.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome, because then people in those communities can actually like take ownership of what they're doing, and it's not like happening to them.
Correct. Yeah, it's their idea. I'm just along for the ride because I happen to speak funder, and so yeah. I help write yeah. the grant, you know. Yeah. But it's not my idea, but the ideas are so cool. So just seeing more space for that in general. Mm-hmm. That as the center, our role is to help with that empowerment and that step forward, but also more broadly across the Gulf, we're seeing more communities with getting access to the resources and the technical support they need to run and to really move headfirst into this space of adaptation in a self-deterministic way.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Renee, for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for asking to do this.
Thank you for listening to On Our Watch. We hope you enjoyed our discussion with Renee Colini. Don't forget to subscribe to On Our Watch on your favorite podcast app to be notified about future episodes. You can find our feature-length documentary, On Our Watch, as well as a video version of today's episode, in the links below. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with another episode next week. This podcast is made possible through support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation and executive produced by Bruno UK Steiner.